Welcome. Jump into the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast, where leading with love isn't just nice, it's genius. I'm Laurel Donnellan.
And I'm Daryl Brown. We'll unpack business strategies infused with empathy and action, driving both profit and purpose. Our world is ever-changing, so discover how the savvy leader wears compassion as their power suit.
It is my great honor to have two of our CLC award honorees from 2024. I'm so excited to bring them together and to be in conversation. Our first honoree is Devon Henry. He is the CEO and president of Team Henry Enterprises. Devon hails from Richmond, Virginia. In 2023, he demonstrated extraordinary courage by taking a firm stand for his values and well-being of his community stakeholders through his leadership in removing 24 Confederate statues across the southern United States. He assumed a role that many found too contentious or risky, engaging directly with a deeply polarized issue at the intersection of history, race, and identity by converting them into art and using the proceeds to support nonprofit organizations tackling societal issues linked to oppressive ideologies these monuments once symbolized. Henry advocated for a transformative vision of his community and history while facing significant risk to the safety of himself, his family, and his team. Welcome, Devon. We're so happy to have you. We also have Ish Orkar, who is the Chief Equity and Inclusion Officer at ACLU. She has consistently showcased a steadfast dedication to advancing equity and justice while earning a law degree and her master's in social work. She acknowledges the inevitability of occasional workplace interactions that may inadvertently marginalize colleagues, and she advocates for sustainable solutions, emphasizing collective responsibility and growth. The American Civil Liberties Union, where she works, dares to create a more perfect union beyond one person, party, or side. Their mission is to realize this promise of the United States Constitution for all and expand the reach of its guarantees. Welcome, Ish. Welcome, Devon. I'm so happy to have you here. And thank you for being beautiful representatives of compassionate leadership in the world. I think I'd like to start in the your credentials and the reach that you both have in your different professions is quite astounding. I'm always interested in how that began, like a little bit about how you grew up and why these issues are important to you. I'd love to hear a little bit about your past. So let's start with Devon, if that's okay.
Yeah. Well, first, let me congratulate Ish on the promotion to chief. That is an amazing honor. And congratulations, sister. You know, when you talk about, you know, kind of where I am today, you know, none of that is possible without reflecting on my background and kind of where I've been and what I've gone through and who I've gone through it with. And that starts and stops with my mother, who she had me when she was 16 years old, pregnant when she was 15. And the father didn't want to have anything to do with me. And so in our communities, a lot of times the grandmother would step up and help, or the mother would step up and help and kind of help raise the baby, because the mother is still a baby. And, you know, my mother's mother died 30 days after I was born. Mm-hmm. So she never really had that type of support. And so it was my grandfather who was around to help. And it was a very tough love type of environment. But I witnessed my mother, who said, okay, well, I have a child, and I need to figure out what we are going to do and how we're going to survive. And she started working at McDonald's at the age of 17. And I mean, when I say working at McDonald's, I mean, hey, you want fries with that drink and so forth, to, you know, back in 2020, she actually owned 5 McDonald's in the Richmond area. And so the story between there is a story of grit, determination, a lot of failure, but a lot of learning from failure. And so having to go through the things that we went through as a single family, single mother, and having to take a more leader role in my household and my family, you grow up fast. And so when we moved to Virginia, you know, I went to 3 different elementary schools, 3 different middle schools, and it was always movement. And so it was a stability, and being stable was kind of tough. But in my mind, it was allowing me to meet different people, and it was allowing me to see different environments. And, you know, it's all about, my mother will always tell me, it's all about perspective and how do you view things. And so upon graduating high school, I went to Norfolk State University, the largest historically Black college university in Virginia, on a science scholarship. I would graduate in 2000. The full circle moment is that back in 2016, I was asked by the then governor of Virginia to serve on the board of the university. And so being in a situation where I was the first to go to college and to actually be able to matriculate through and then be asked to come back and serve on the governing body is, you can't even make this stuff up. And just fast forward, I know I can't wait to hear Ish's story, but I graduated, went to work at General Electric, this little company up in Connecticut. You may have heard of it, and went through their corporate leadership program, decided, hey, I want to start my own business, because GE was really teaching you that, you know, having responsibility and authority over your business. And so in 2006, started a business in the heart of the Great Recession, grew the business after a bunch of restarts and restarts. And so today, you know, we are a general contractor. On one side of the house, we have a logistics firm on the other side of the house, and we operate, you know, probably in 30 states. And, you know, the claim to fame is kind of what you mentioned about taking down statues, but our most meaningful work has been the work we've done with building memorials to those that were enslaved. And I could talk a little bit more about that, but I don't want to just, you know, kind of take over the conversation with that. Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of the backdrop of kind of how we got to where we are and who's my most inspiring person in life.
Thank you so much. It sounds like you come from amazing stock, your mom. It sounds like you have entrepreneurship and resilience, you know, you well deserved in your story. Beautiful story. Thank you so much for sharing it. Ish, tell us a little bit about where you come from.
Yeah, thanks for that question. So I was raised in a country that actually was under military rule. And I've been thinking about that a lot recently because it was led by a dictator. And one of the things that was very apparent to me as a young child was that the rule of law just wasn't really accessible to everyday people. And I was someone who's always had such a heart for human rights and for really respecting the rights that each of us have innately as humans. And it was really hard for me to reconcile what I was seeing in the world with what I thought should be a just response to some of what I was observing. And so I mention that because I think we're at a very unique point, and I could not be more proud to work for the ACLU. It's just such a natural fit for me because the work that my organization is doing is to preserve the civil rights and civil liberties of all Americans. And I just feel like I know what it looks like when those things aren't present in a society. And so it was just such a natural fit for me, I think, to work here. It's such a dream come true. And I think that what I bring to the table is the ability to try to make the workplace a place of inclusion and belonging so that staff can focus on this important work that they're doing in the world, right? And I don't want there to be conflicts in the office that really end up distracting folks from the important jobs that they have. And so my background from conflict resolution actually started again when I was quite young. I remember listening to arguments between my parents, and I had this ability to see things from both sides. And I would sort of act as the mediator, and I would say, okay, mother, what I hear you saying is X, right? And father, what I hear you saying is Y. So what I would recommend is, you know, and I'm thinking, who is this precocious child? But those are valuable skills. And I feel like I'm in an organization that recognizes that. And it's just such a privilege to be able to serve staff in this way.
Well, here we are a week before an important election, and we're not going to necessarily be partisan today. But I will say this, I have always lived in a red state or a blue state, but I currently live in a purple state. And I'm learning a lot from this vantage point. What I'd like to ask you both as leaders who've definitely gone through conflicts and manage people that have probably different and, you know, manage people, but also have to confront people that have different points of view. What do we do as leaders after the election? Because 50% of the electorate is going to be heartbroken or at least disappointed. Some will go on quicker than others. What can we do as leaders to be compassionate no matter the outcome? And it's a hard question. I've been grappling it. I'm actually writing a Forbes piece about it, so you guys are helping me. It's a hard question to answer.
I could start. Things come to mind. I think we really need to engage in deep listening. I think it's not something that we're skilled at in our culture and in society. And yet I don't know of another path forward other than learning more about each other, being more curious about people that maybe hold different viewpoints than we do, and engaging in a respectful exchange of sharing our ideas, our stories, our backgrounds, our passions, our motivations, and then listening in such a way that demonstrates that you are actually invested in the person who is sharing with you, so that they understand that we don't need to be on opposite sides of anything. We actually can find common ground and can connect on hopefully common values that then will allow us to move forward.
And I think all of us have to do it from an authentic place, like really, really dig deep ourselves, no matter what our point of view is, and open our hearts. Not easy. Devon?
This one's tough. It's tough because this country has come to a... I love what Ish said, because that would be my answer. We need to be more intentional listeners and do, you know, very deep listening of one another. The challenge that we are faced with in this country today is that we are so polar at different extremes, right? I'm not a fan of being so far to the left or so far to the right that it makes it so difficult for us to try to come together in the middle, because we're so tainted with our thoughts around, hey, this person has to be right. And if I'm right, and if this person is right, then this person is totally wrong. Like, there is no in between. And, you know, there has to be some point. And I love what Ish said around where we have so much more in common than we do not. And how do we pull that out of each other? Right? Because there has been so many instances during this political season where people that were your friends and people that shared, you know, coffee with you and been to your home, and regardless of race, but then you start hearing and seeing some of the rhetoric that they are buying into and that they're starting to share. And it's like, wow, how do we mend that? And how do we get back to a place where you can be in my house, have a coffee? Because after what you said, I did not want to let you back in my house to have coffee, right? And you think about compassion and you think about empathy, right? And you think about what is it that is driving these extreme thoughts and this extreme nature? And if I empathize with it, I'm trying to put myself in that place. And it's very difficult for me to do that. So I you know, I guess I have to resort back to, I am 1000% okay with sitting down and having a conversation with those. But I think we have to be courageous in the, in what comes out of that conversation to act upon it, right? So if we, you and I both agree that we both like LeBron James and we both like, you know, Ford Fusions, okay, we have some things in common, right? Let's start there. Where are the commonalities? And then we can start pulling out all those things, those extremes that are pulling us apart, and just try to figure out where can we meet in the middle. There's something that we both like, food, sports, something. And let's start there. And then we work around and then we work from there. But, the, you know, November 6th is going to be a very interesting day. Yeah.
Yeah. I am. So I live in Michigan. I'm a very high information voter. I know who I'm voting for. I know a lot about the issues, but I do know that, and I come from a very political family. Like, my great grandmother and grandmother were suffragettes in Chicago, and they fought for women to vote. And my grandmother voted for the first time when she was 25, right? So yeah. I come from that. And then I have a niece who's working for voters' rights all over the world. So it's really in our bones. It's our thing. But there's a lot of people where it's not their thing. And I'm watching these commercials and I'm trying to empathize and open my heart. I'm like, you know what? If all I looked at was the marketing, I wouldn't vote. And, you know, so I think the other thing I've been thinking about is, what if this election was a football game? And, you know, we all got mad for about an hour and then we went to the bar and had a drink together. So maybe, like, I'm actually taking election day off from the news, and I'm going to be praying and meditating the whole day for a quick recovery with a lot of forgiveness and a lot of grace. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a difficult time for everyone, I think. Thank you for your thoughts. They're beautiful.
I pray it remains peaceful, though. I pray it remains peaceful.
Yeah, I think we can all send out prayers for that.
Yeah.
So, Ish, I didn't know that you were an immigrant and you were born in another country. I love that. I have my great-grandparents were immigrants and came to this country because they were very, very poor and needed to figure out how to feed their families. And Devon, I know that the work that you've done, that you've gotten a lot of press for, has been difficult for you and your family because you've been a target of, you know, hate. Let's just call it what it is. So I think helping everyone connect to the repercussions of hate, like, what is it like to be a human, you know, a proud American human, and get thrown hate because of where you come from or the color of your skin or the cause that you take up? Because I really want people to know what that feels like, if you don't mind sharing that.
Well, I mean, if the question is directed to me, I mean, hate of Black folks in this country is nothing new. I mean, that's not a news flash. I think in my case, what I went through in regards to removing these Confederate statues and folks being very, very upset about that became more of a news topic across the country. And in fact, across the world, I struggled with it because of the level of vitriol that was being spewed and the level of threats and the, you know, having to have 24-hour security at your home is not, you know, it's not what I signed up for. But in the throes of it, you're saying, okay, we're doing something that nobody would do. One, two, you're doing something that you feel should be done. And you're feeling that from a courageous standpoint, that you want your kids to know that you're able to stand up and do something that others view should not be done. But it's never the wrong time to do the right thing, as that's been stated before by a great man. And if I were to look back on all of the happenings during this time over the last 4 or 5 years, what folks think is happening is that all of these hateful messages and the death threats and all that kind of jazz, it's real. It's happened. It is happening. But there were, that's probably 10%, right? 20%. 80% of the folks were like, Devon, thank you, right? Devon, we got your back. But it's just how loud the negativity and the hate is. I choose love over hate always. And I choose to be a good human. And I think when you provide this level of, hey, I will not surrender to this level of just hate. And, you know, no matter what you throw at me, I'm going to remain kind and I'm going to remain in a spirit of love. That's just where my heart is, because I've just seen so much ugly in my life that I just don't want to spew any of that. And I know that you can get over things, and over time they will get over the fact that I took down a statue, right? And then others will get over the fact that, you know, it was a Black man that took down the statues. But the folks that appreciate it, they are extremely proud and happy that these things happen. And so if I had to do it all over again, I'll do it every day, because I know the impact that it's had on Black and brown people and folks that come from communities that I come from.
Thank you. And how during that period did you find forgiveness and find peace and find love, like in the midst of it? How did you find the love?
Yeah, my daughter is she's a graduating senior in college. She's a psychology major. And she's just like, Dad, mentally it was very disturbing. Mentally, it is present tense, take a toll on me mentally. And she suggested therapy. And I've gone through and continue to go through therapy to just be in a good place, in a good spirit, in a good mind. And I have a good support system. I have good people around me that, one, they are supportive of what we've done, but they also don't play about me, right? And so they will let me know, hey, Devon, that's not, you know, forget about that. Don't read this. Don't respond to that. And that helps me. I've been through a lot growing up. So, and I've seen, and I've had the hot temper, and I've had all of that, but life is short, and I want to be here for a while to enjoy, you know, the things this that you should be able to be afforded, and see my kids, you know, live, you know, prosperous lives and be great humans.
Thank you for sharing that and being so vulnerable. It's so important. I think sometimes when people read about warriors or courageous people, they think, you know, they just, this is what they do, and they just go on. And there's a cost, and it's sometimes hard to ask for help.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. Ish, what do you want to say about dealing with negativity?
Well, first I want to start by saying, Devon, I wrote down this quote, I choose love over hate always. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. What I want to say, what's top of mind for me is an incident that happened not that long ago. It's a personal incident. I live in Brooklyn, New York, and I went shopping for groceries. And there was a dispute over a parking spot, as is quite common in spaces that don't have a lot of room. Unfortunately, the person that did not get the parking spot that I ended up with was quite upset and rolled down his window and spewed the N-word at me repeatedly, like for minutes. And I was shocked. I remember vacillating between my head and my heart. So my head instantly went into professional mode of, oh, well, this is an interesting experience of someone else who is a person of color who has developed this concept of racial hierarchy where, he feels emboldened based on systemic, all of these things, right? Trying to understand what's happening here. But in my heart space, I was so hurt and I was devastated. And I needed to figure out what my next move was going to be. And, looking back, it all happened so quickly. But in the moment, it really, time really slows down. And I was trying to evaluate kind of a cost-benefit of analysis of having a response versus just walking away. And I ended up walking away. And I remember thinking about the impact, like I was shaking. I'm even shaking now, just remembering what that moment was like. And thinking, how do I shop for groceries? How do I leave this behind me in the past and not carry it with me? Not just through that store, but through my interactions with other people who look like this person, right? And it was such an interesting experience because I tend to get quite analytical and intellectualize things a lot. But I kept trying to remember what Devon just shared with us. What does it look like to choose love in this moment? What does it look like to be restorative? I'm a restorative practitioner. How do I practice that right now? And it created an opportunity for me to share this with my kids. And I remember my oldest son saying, "Oh, mom, you're lucky I wasn't there. You know what I would have done, And it's such a natural response, but I took the time to walk through the next steps with him, right? So let's say you did respond in a physical manner, then what? Then what happens next? Then what happens with that escalation? Then what happens when the cops are called? Then what happens, And I think that we don't, it was an opportunity for all of us to reflect on a very painful reality that still exists in our country, but also the power that we have to make different choices, to practice love, to practice, not wishing retribution on someone and thinking about, what does it look like in these little moments to create a piece of the world that we hope to all eventually live in.
I appreciate both of you for being so personal and vulnerable. Thank you. And sometimes I imagine you want to choose safety over conflict.
Yeah. Is that a question? Yeah. Hence the
It's
24-hour
hard to know.
security. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to know what to do, but you know what you in your heart, you know what to do, and you can assess the situation. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry for the people in my country that don't understand equality. And
Well,
they
it's our
don't
country,
understand
right? And
our country.
we have to live in that spirit of this is all of our space, right? And that's part of what you just said, right? Is that they don't believe in, equality and equity and, but they have to. We're sharing the same space, even if it's a parking space,
We're
right?
literally sharing a space.
And we just got to get to this place that it's okay, for others to have success. It's okay for others to have a parking space. It's okay for others things to happen in our lives that are not for you, but for others that help them. And that's a fundamental issue that this country has, right? That if you're doing good, that means I'm doing bad. That's not the
Yeah.
case. It's just
I'm
not.
with you there, Devon. I think that scarcity mindset is really detrimental to
Yes.
our well-being as a society and as a
Yeah.
culture. That's
Yes.
probably at the core of everything. The scarcity mentality creates fear and creates bias and all sorts of things. So I'm also about to write a piece that was kind of a reaction to this election, but it's going to be a more evergreen piece. So my co-host, Darryl Brown, who's not here today, he is a leader in diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. He did that in media, where he worked on finding equity in for Black entertainers and Latinx entertainers. And he's been on the board of trustees at Fordham and has led a pretty astounding, I think, 20-year process where the board of trustees has become more diverse and the student population and the faculty. So because of what I've learned from him and others in institutions, I believe that diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging programs and protocols and standards are really, really important to continue and build upon. And I don't really think of them as political, but essential. So I'd love to hear any insights either one of you have around, I mean, I think this DEI stuff has been villainized and I'm angry about it. So I'd like to do my part kind of showing that it's, I think also my experience of working with corporations is sometimes people created a DEI department or they chose a minority to lead it and they didn't give them any resources or education or help. And then they decided that, okay, that's a bad idea. So I'm just curious about any thoughts you have about DEIB in the world and if you could speak to it related to your job. Why don't we start with you?
Yeah, I'm happy to start. I think you're right, Laurel. I think that what's happening right now in the media and in many other spaces is really unfortunate because to me it just represents a fundamental misunderstanding about what the work is and what the objectives are. If you meet with people, if you speak to them about what this work is really about creating spaces of inclusion and belonging, about really wanting everyone in the workplace to have equal opportunity to thrive, about wanting to think about who might not be present in leadership or in decision-making spaces, whose voices should be valued, you know, if you talk to people about these things, there is alignment across the board. It is not controversial. These are not new novel ideas. I mean, I don't know a kid on a playground who hasn't thought about what it means to feel included or a sense of belonging, right? And so I guess that disconnect is really the work that we all need to do as practitioners. And it's the work we need to do within and external to our organizations as well. And it's an honor and a privilege. But it's also quite challenging, I think, in this moment to get people to really peel back the layers of the onion, so to speak, and get to the heart of what this work is really all about.
And I admire the work you're doing, Ish. It's much needed, as you just described. And it is very unfortunate when you know well-informed people, you know, well-educated folks, yet you will hear them say something like, oh, that's a DEI hire. Or that, I mean, it makes you cringe, right? Because what is a DEI hire, right? What does that actually mean? That someone took someone else's position that someone else could have had that was not of a diverse background? Does it mean that, you know, someone skipped the line? Does it mean someone was given something? In my mind, none of those things are true. In my mind, I believe it's giving folks an opportunity who would have under normal circumstances have been overlooked forever, right? And have been begging and dying for the opportunity to be seen and to show that you have the same skill set, if not greater, but have never been given a true opportunity. That's how I see it. Particularly on the supplier diversity side, where as a contractor, I talked to, you know, a bunch of corporations about them having, you know, a mission to say they want to do work with suppliers and vendors who look like their base, right? But guess what? The how do you engage these folks? How do you bring them in? How do you get them in the fold, right? Because if you're the people that are making these decisions, if they just believe the latter or kind of what I described earlier, you know, these folks, they'll never get the opportunity. And then when they do get an opportunity, it is the margin of error is so slim, right? That once you get in there, you almost have to be perfect. And I think you have to peel this onion back. And I love the, I'm a huge proponent of DEI, but I'm also, what I've learned is the importance of belonging, right? And that how, and you can say, yeah, we're going to bring in the number of people that are diverse backgrounds, but if they don't feel like you don't really want them there, or if they don't feel like they really, there's no effort to make them feel like they belong, how long are they going to last, right? And then the narrative becomes, well, they just didn't work out, right? No, it's because there was not a sense of belonging there. And so so that's why I started out with, I admire the work that Ish done. I think it is a very important work. And we have to, you know, it goes back to that conversation around, hey, where are the commonalities? Let's sit down. Let's have a real conversation around what this means. There's just this whole thing about this, somebody being given something is asinine. It's just not the case. It is an opportunity that we would not have been given or afforded had there not been for this type of initiative in place, meaning diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging.
Yeah. Well said, both of you. Thank you. I like this idea of being seen. It's really just about being seen and being connected, right? So maybe we need to rebrand. Being seen, being connected, given opportunities, giving, and letting the institution benefit from diversity, you know. It's really exciting. So I would love to hear from each of you what you're up to right now in your pursuits and what you're looking forward to.
So, you know, as I stated, we are a general contractor and we've worked over 400 or 500 projects. The projects that get me excited today, and mind you, we build schools, banks, clinics, so forth and so on, like the normal general contractor bill. But the project that I alluded to earlier was at the University of Virginia, where they were grappling with how to truly pay homage to those who actually built the university. Not Thomas Jefferson, who was the architect and the founder, but the hands, the labor who built this university. They decided they wanted to build a very meaningful memorial. And so we were the contractor that was afforded the opportunity to do so. And it's called the Memorial to Enslaved Laborers at the University of Virginia. And while folks may think the statues and those things are like, you know, the most, you know, the best thing we've ever done, the most meaningful work, that's just our most visible work, is the statues. The most meaningful work has been this work of giving a voice to the voiceless and providing folks the opportunity. Maybe obviously the folks that were enslaved, they will never get a chance to see this, but their descendants, you know, they are saying, hey, we're my family is being seen and my family is being recognized. And so we're doing that type of work more, restoring narratives of Black stories, of cultural stories that have been lost or that have been misinterpreted or that have been stolen. And so the latest project that we're doing now and we're currently building is at the University of Richmond, where there was a burial ground there. The university was basically built on the enslaved burial ground. And, you know, for decades, you know, they knew and they were trying to figure out how to make right with it. And to their credit, they've decided to do something meaningful. And we're building a memorial around this burial ground to allow a place for reflection, to allow a place of real recognition to those that are buried there, and to pay homage. And so those are the really cool projects that I get up for in the morning. And we're talking to other municipalities as well as other universities around building this type of work. And so we're excited about it. And if you're ever in Virginia, let me know. I'm happy to give you a tour of any of these projects that we have going on.
Well, I have a nephew at Howard. No, sorry, Morehouse. Sorry, Andrew. Morehouse.
Big difference. Atlanta, DC. Yeah.
So when I go to see him, I'll come over to see you, and I'd love to see that. What an amazing thing. Ish, what are you looking forward to? What are you working on?
Yeah, I'm working on building a culture of belonging at the ACLU. And so I really appreciate you bringing that up, Devon. And
yes.
also, Laurel, you were talking about the importance of people feeling seen and heard and connected. And so that's really at the heart of the Community Building Circle program that I'm developing and expanding right now. And the goal is to get staff to know each other outside of our professional roles, right? Like, what does it look like for me to hear a story about you that helps me feel more connected to you? And I think we have so much to learn about each other. And if we can do so in a way that feels structured and safe and supportive, I think it only makes us a stronger community. And so that's what I'm really excited about. So far, it's been very well received. And I think, you know, there's been a lot of talk of having circle spaces in K through 12 institutions and not as much in the workplace. And so this is what I'm really excited about, is the use of this tool throughout the employee life cycle and thinking, how can we sit in circle and sort of humanize our experience as employees in such a way that just makes it a more welcoming environment for all.
Love that.
We'd love to talk to you more about that. That's amazing. I recently did a retreat, and as a way to connect people, we put them into learning pairs. We always put people into learning pods and learning pairs, but we sort of organize it like a wedding. We put people together who are different and don't know each other. And we had people share a story about their favorite object, not their favorite person, but, and I shared, I lost my dad in August, and he was an engineer at IBM, and he worked on computers for the Apollo program. And I actually have a medallion that's made out of an Apollo vehicle. And so I shared that, but there's just fun ways to connect people. As we come to a close today, I'd love for you each to share for our listeners a lesson you want to share about life and a lesson about leadership. So, Ish, tell me about something you want to share with our listeners that is a life lesson for you.
Yeah, I think that I've always been kind of interdisciplinary in my approach to life and to learning. And I think that that's actually really served me well. It's interesting because this whole conversation, I've been talking about how important it is to create spaces of inclusion and belonging. But in my own life, I have found that sometimes it can be really powerful to just be the only one. And I can give you two really quick examples. When I was a lawyer with a social work background, I was working as a litigator, and there was a moment in trial where a client just needed a moment to collect herself. And so I was able to request a recess from the judge and really pay attention and be really trauma-informed in my response. And I realized that that's a skill that not a lot of other attorneys have, right? And so, you know, the flip side was also true, is when I was working as a social worker, my legal perspective allowed me to explain, you know, what is a power of attorney for healthcare, and what does it mean to have a do not resuscitate order, right? And so it gives you a unique advantage. And most of the time you will find that people want to put you in a box. They want you to have a predetermined path. But if you can be really curious about what your interests are and be brave and vulnerable enough to create your own path, I think that you'll be surprised at really the benefits and the unique perspective that you can have that ends up being a huge advantage to any community you're a part of.
Great example of being yourself. Being the lawyer that also has a degree in social work can be very wonderful. Devon, how about you? What is your lesson for our listeners for life?
I will say that I always start with mentor. Like, you know, I'm a huge proponent of seeking out mentorship. And that's in life, that's in business. That's, you know, that's just a thing. But I think there's someone else out there that has done some things that you want to do, and they're willing to share those things. But the real lesson that I've been talking to my kids about here lately, and that is this whole comparison thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they say that comparison is the thief of joy. And why they say that is because I'm always comparing myself to something that you're doing or something that they're doing. And I need to understand, what is success look like for me, right? What does happiness look like for me? And when I tell my kids, I said, and especially them, because they're always on this, you know, the social media, and I look, social media is here and there's nothing we're going to be able to do about it. But I don't want them to think that that's the real life, right? I don't want them to think that, you know, everybody has great days, right? I don't want them to think that you have to be at this level when you're, you know, 15 or 21, your pace, your race, and you have to be strong in your conviction that you know what makes you happy, right? And then you live that happiness versus trying to live through someone else. And so that's my big, and I today, me too, right? There are other businesses that I see that are doing things like, darn, I could be doing that too. All right, Devon, well, what does it take to get there? Is that really, you know, do you really want to be a $3 billion company, right? You know, those are things that you just have to be settled within yourself. And I've tried to convey that in a manner that's relatable to not just my children, but, you know, my mentees and things of that nature.
So I promised to get you guys out of here on time, and we might run a bit over, or we can just do the rest of it very quickly. So I'm going to ask you the leadership question. Do you have an extra couple of minutes to go over? Okay. I'm having such a good time with you all. And what leadership lesson do you want to share with our listeners-ish?
My leadership lesson is around the value of knowing yourself really well. I feel like in so many leadership circles, we hear about know your why, you know, and that's great advice. But I think, can we start with the knowing piece? And I think it's really important, because when you know yourself, you can lead from that place of knowing, mm-hmm. and you can be really effective in leadership that way. I think it's important to remember, you're not always going to work with people who get it, who understand the value that you bring to the table. There's, you know, Devon was just talking about social media, right? And I think so much of us seek that external validation at the expense of being true to ourselves and our unique qualities. So that's my leadership lesson, is know thyself, be confident in what you bring to the table and what you have to offer.
Lovely. Devon, what's your leadership lesson?
I love that. Know thyself. Thanks, Ish. I think the moment you stop learning or feel like you know everything, I think is the moment that things start going haywire in my business, right? I am, from a business standpoint, I'm always seeking knowledge. I'm always trying to figure out the next thing to figure out. And so curiosity is where this goes. It's not a bad thing to be curious, to learn and to know, and to put smart people around you. And then that's one piece. And then the other piece is just paying it forward. There's always going to be, I speak for myself. I did not get here by myself, right? There's always people that have helped you along the way. Pay it forward. It comes back. And that's in life, but business for sure. You know, the ladder that you were able to climb up, don't pull it up behind you, extend it and help others. And I think you just get so much more out of life. Devon says you get so much more out of life when you pay it forward.
Well, I hate to end this conversation because it's been so amazing. I feel like I got a masterclass in so many things, including compassionate leadership, from the both of you. It's been an honor to bring you together. I'd love you to share how people can learn more about you and your work. Devon, how do they get in touch?
Yeah, so you can reach me or find out what's going on in my world. I have a website, devonhenry.com, actually. My company, Team Henry Enterprises, ENT.com. I'm on Instagram. I'm on all the social media stuff we talked about earlier. I'm on all of the things, but LinkedIn is probably my most active space. And then just be on the lookout. I've decided to prayerfully said, I'm going to write this book that everyone keeps telling me that there's a book inside of me about this, what's happened and how did we get to be this person that actually took these steps to do some courageous things. And so be on the lookout for that at some point towards Q1 of next year.
Thank you so much, Ish.
Yeah, I can't wait to read Devon's book, please.
Me too.
I'm ordering my advanced copy right now. So if you want to learn more about the ACLU, please go to aclu.org. And if you want to connect with me personally, I am on LinkedIn. So feel free to message me and happy to connect there as well.
Thank you for all your time. It's been a pleasure.
Yes.
Bye.
Take care.
And that's a heart-wrapped episode of the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast. May your compass always point to kindness.
As you navigate the world, let compassion be your North Star. Join us next time as we continue to redefine success one heart-led decision at a time.
Lead wisely, lead with heart. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com.